you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. There's so much that is unpacked now.
Hola.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. It is going to be our last one for 2 weeks, because I don't know if you heard this, Joe. I don't know if Facebook has seen this.
Pray tell.
But I am getting on a plane on Monday and flying to Tel Aviv and going to spend, it'll be 12 days total, but about 9, 10 days in country in Israel with a group of 30 pastors from all across the country who I met yesterday on a big Zoom call, and it's going to be a fun group to be with. It's very funny. We actually have three guys that all went to barber school, and which I've never had that in a group of pastors, but they were like right in a row introducing
it's
themselves.
Seamless transition from primping to pastor.
Yeah, apparently. And yeah, they were like, well, we're going to, you know, the one guy's like, hey, I'm bring stuff. And I'm like, great. You know, we'll get a haircut and midstream and stuff. We'll be good. So it was fun. And it was good getting to know everybody that you're going to be with for, you know, obviously the guys bond over a 10-day period like
What's
that.
What's the time difference like?
7 hours.
Okay.
Seven ahead right now. So it's like 6 o'clock. So it's 1 a.m. there.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, don't text me at dinner time, Joe. Yeah.
Do you want to do the show?
No. Be like, hi, I'll be in my covers. Hi. But no, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited to, you know, eat some hummus and some falafel and some shawarma. And it's going to be good.
Any of that is, but okay.
You would love the shawarma and, yeah, and some of the lamb and some of the meats and stuff, because I know you do keto. And the fish is awesome, too. Fish right out of the Sea of Galilee to get some St. Peter's fish. It's just tilapia, but.
No, it's St. Peter's fish.
It's St. Peter's fish. It is. It's special tilapia. It's blessed tilapia.
Yes, there you go.
It's good. But yeah, so next couple of weeks, that's where I will be and enjoying that. What's I think for you, is there a trip like that? I know you used to go to the Bahamas every year and run your 5K. Like for me, this is, you know, tank filling central. I know I'm going to come back like on this like spiritual high. I'm going to be rejuvenated. I'm going to be tan. I'm going to be all those things. I'm going to get to soak in just some incredible time with some incredible people. Are there trips like that for Joe that just, you know, fill all the buckets?
It's not necessarily a place, but anytime I go somewhere and I forget what I was doing before I left is where it really opens things up, because, you know, you get those consecutive days and they kind of like fuse together. But when you go on those trips, you're I gotta go back to my life, but I don't remember much what's going on there, you know?
Yeah, it's always beautiful when you come back and you're like, well, I don't remember what I was doing before I left. And
I can start fresh.
That's beautiful. So what's going on in your world? How's last 2 days been?
Good. It's a consolidation phase, and these are my favorite to describe to the audience and the worst to actually experience. And everybody goes through them. I mean, but the biggest and most dense senses of loss come in the consolidation, because you're thinking about like cutting some fats out, cutting some things that weren't supposed to be there, and they feel like a million tiny little breakups, because, you know, like it or not, you form emotional attachments with things in your world. And when they leave you, they're not always under the best circumstances. So there's a little bit of loss, a little bit of sadness that goes along with this. But I know great things always follow this phase.
And how long for you do you intentionally go through consolidation phases, or do they just show up?
Well, a little bit of both. This one showed up, and you know, I usually take the cues where once they start happening, I like, oh, the pit's on fire, and I'll start just dumping stuff into the consolidation pit, get it all over with, right?
Well, the house is on fire. We might as well, you know what? Let's spread it to the garage.
There's some trash in the backyard. Let's put it on.
Yeah, no, I get that. It makes sense. Like, you know, if that's the direction the horse is running, might as well
take advantage of it.
Yeah, no, totally. And when you go through a consolidation phase, some people don't deal with loss well. You know, loss for a lot of people can be detrimental. It can deviate whole swaths of their life. Yep. When somebody, you know, dies in their life, like it's a huge deal for people. When a divorce happens, or a loved one, you know, a child moves away and goes to college, like those moments, those big pivotal moments, like, yes, we should recognize our feelings. And yes, you're going to have to navigate, you know, grief and anger and struggle. And like you said, there's even a little sadness right now during the consolidation period. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But for some people, it's a train wreck.
Yep, For sure.
And they never recover. So how does Joe move through a consolidation period where you're going, you know what? I feel the sadness. I realize I'm releasing and letting go, and some things by choice and some things not by choice. How do you navigate a consolidation period where you release things?
Well, there's no natural resolution. So if you're going to get resolution, you have to create it yourself. Yeah. So I asked two questions. Number one, I'm introspective, so I have to do this. It's just part of the gig. Number one, could I have done something different to either resurrect or save it? Mm. And number two is, am I going to do something? And if I can't answer both of those questions, it's got to die and it's got to move on, because I have no intention. I couldn't have done anything. It was just happenstance or whatever.
Sure.
And I don't want to do anything about it. So put it in the ground and put the headstone.
And I think for some of those things that, you know, sometimes that's easy. Sometimes it's like, well, you know what? Yeah, I've been meaning to get rid of this anyway. I've been dragging it around back here and other things are getting consolidated, so throw it on the fire. But sometimes the things that start on fire aren't things that you want to let go of. Sometimes there are people attached to that. Sure. And those are the tough ones. Like, it's one thing to say, you know what? I'm going to let that hobby die. I'm not going fishing anymore. I'm going to sell my fishing poles and I'm going to chuck that in the consolidation pile. But, you know, your buddy Tom, who you go fishing with all the time, is the casualty of that. Yes, right. So how do you navigate the relational casualties that a lot of times are attached to the consolidation?
And that's part of the, when a relationship is destroyed because of it, it'll get to decide that, you know what, this person took some injury and it wasn't fair to them. And then I'm not going to say I'm going to resurrect it, but I'm going to do whatever it takes to make those ones right. And if there was a wrong that happened, sure, it's not like pull it back in and make it there, you know, inauthentically, but it's like, I want to make sure that I leave without any damage or have can't be fallout from what my, you know, decisions.
Well, and sometimes it's just an opportunity. You know, I always coach people, like, sometimes it's just an opportunity to reframe things. You know, sometimes, you know, yeah, you stop going fishing and you sold your fishing poles and you decided, you know what, I'm going to invest that time differently. We're consolidating that hobby out of my life, or whatever it might be. And, you know, that means I'm going to spend less time with Tom or whoever, you know, but that also means that this whole sphere opens up time-wise for me. Sure. It means that, well, Tom and I might not get to spend time. Now I get to spend time with Terry, who I've been meaning to spend time with. And you know what I mean? There are those trade-offs. And I think for a lot of people, when they get into those loss phases, you can either hyper-focus on what you're losing, or you can turn and go, you know what? Yes, it is a little sad, but man, look at the opportunities that lie in front.
Well, and we'll call it 95% of them, you knew all along those things shouldn't have been there and they were already create a mess anyhow. But when you get super focused on that five, it seems like there's more of that than the other ones. And that's why I'm super quick about just tagging it as something that should move on from and trying to move on quickly. But we talked about last show where you have sort of like a lot of things and you kind of diversify your options. And then you can fill in a Terry when this one goes away.
Right.
And maybe just the distraction of having a different thing will make you forget that, you know, that was there in the first place. You won't be so sad about it.
Well, you know, and, you know, I often think about, you know, we moved from New Jersey to Ohio. There were a lot of relationships that got reframed for us. You know, coming here, we met a whole bunch of people that we had never met before and wouldn't have met otherwise. But we also have people in our lives that we talk to every day that we now might talk to once a month or every 6 months, or we see them once a year. And that includes family, like people that are blood, and that, you know, we were close to, and now there's some distance. And now, you know, we hear updates from the kids on about the kids on social media, and, you know, we catch up, oh, we bumped into them at a wedding or whatever. Relationships get reframed throughout life. And I find for myself that I'm healthiest when I handle every relationship that comes my way with an open hand. You've heard me, I'm sure, talk about this at church, but realistically, when people come into my life, I count them as a blessing. They've come into my life, but there may come a season that God decides to pluck them out or pluck me out. And so what do I do to navigate that time? Well, if I keep my mind in that space that, hey, they weren't mine to begin with. They weren't mine to hold.
Exactly.
But they were there. And whether it's 5 years and 50 years, very few people last a lifetime. Most people are very seasonal in your life. They come in for college. They come in for high school. They come in for your early career. Like, a lot of people are seasonal. There's very few people that will last a lifetime. The problem for most people is they treat every relationship that comes their way like this is forever. Like, we're going to be, and it's like, well, right now we're together, but, you know, forever might mean that, hey, we see each other once a year. We catch up with the relationship can be reframed. And I think that's the wrestle for people, is when they get into a consolidation period, And they start saying goodbye to hobbies or goodbye to a job or goodbye to whatever it is. When you're doing it on your terms, it's great. But when it's happening to you, those relationships and those things start to pile up and can get overwhelming. Does Joe ever get overwhelmed in that department?
I do. And most of it's confusion. Like I really buy in my, you know, my faith tells me that what's supposed to happen is going to, and I'm just kind of like you're saying, the steward of it.
Yep.
But the practice is, it's kind of easy when you're talking about money or physical things. Like somebody says, hey, you're not supposed to have that Jeep, and unlikely the Jeep gets squished 9 times in a row.
Yeah,
you get the instance that that's not supposed to be.
Right.
But relationships are like, you fall in love a little bit with your circumstances. So you break in ties with people in Jersey, right? It's not like saying goodbye to a Jeep. It's a person with emotions and whatever. Now I can't, it's tough to calculate. Like every time that there's been a consolidation, there's been a net gain. Right.
But 100%.
I cannot say that it's because the removal happened, only that the addition, it was better that, you know what I mean? It's tough to make that sacrifice, but it's always been a better.
Yeah. Do you do any gardening? Do you do tomatoes, any of that sort of stuff?
Ryan and I did a raised garden.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it was the $700 tomato kind of a thing. It was not good. we a couple peppers and a tomato and lots of time and effort watering that thing. And I was like, I'm going to the grocery store next time. That was not a good experience.
Well, so I grew up, my grandmother gardened my whole life. We always had fresh tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, and she would grow tomato plants 8 feet tall, taller. To this day, I've never been able to grow a tomato plant that tall. But when Sam and I first moved to Ohio, I said, you know, I really want to have a garden. So we built a little garden at our previous house, and I grew some cucumbers and zucchini and tomato. And some of them are like super hardy and easy. And, you know, we had like 97 zucchini between two plants. Like it just kept coming and our cucumbers would come. And so we tried to do pickles and we tried to do a bunch of stuff. One of the things that I learned, though, with tomato plants, our tomatoes really struggled. First of all, they were splitting open on the vine. And we learned that we had a calcium deficiency in our soil, and that if you just plant them on top of some eggshells, that usually helps that not to happen, along with there's some supplements you can put into the soil for them. But the other thing that we learned was we weren't getting a ton of tomatoes. And I should have remembered this, but I didn't. But they have these shoots that grow off the main tree, but they don't have any flowers on them, so they don't produce any fruit. And so what you do is you actually pluck those off. And by doing that, you'll cause the plant to be able to produce more fruit and grow more rapidly. And so you have to do that from time to time. They call them suckers, and you pull them off because they literally are sucking the life out of the plant. And so you can't grow the tomatoes as big, or you can't have them as nutritious. And I think the consolidation pieces happen in our lives. They're almost like pruning, like they're cutting back. You know, we had two apple trees, and if we didn't prune the apple trees in the fall time, that by pruning, it enhanced what we were able to grow in the spring. And I think that's true in life. And you hate to say pruning and plucking suckers off when you're talking about people
right,
which is the hard part and all that. But realistically, when you're looking at your life and you're looking at how you're growing, there is a certain fruitfulness and a certain desire that you have to have in your life. And some people do it to themselves. Like I love it when it's natural and somebody plucks themselves out of my life. That's great. But 9 times out of 10, I'm the one that has to, all right, you know what? I need to make this decision, and I have to shift things around, and that relationship is going to be different from here on out.
Well, and honestly, that if you don't do that pruning, it prunes itself, and it's usually way more messy. Had an apple tree in my backyard. Yep. Had a guy came over and say, hey, that branch over there, you better cut that thing down. The apples are going to get too heavy, and it's going to split the tree down the middle, right? Didn't do it because I was like, it'll be fine. I'll pick some apples. It'll be good. What happened? The tree is super dead right now because now it's in two pieces because of that. So had I cut one branch, I would have a live tree. Instead, I didn't want to, and now I have a dead tree.
What kind of apples?
They were not great apples. Yeah, they were not.
The best apples I have ever had have been grown here in Ohio. And they're at White House Fruit Farms, and they do a mix of the Fuji and the Honeycrisp, and they have an Evercrisp apple. It is the crispiest. I love a crisp apple. I don't do the mush. Like if it doesn't snap when you bite it, and the Honeycrisp are very sweet. So the snap and the sweet, that's where it's at.
Favorite.
It is. So, but it's always an interesting process, and it's always painful to go through when you're talking about people. Let's take it out of the realm of people, just because there's so many layers attached to that. But let's talk about, evaluating hobbies, jobs, etc., things that are a little less full of emotion, and talk about how does Joe pull the suckers off? How does he pull the prune in those seasons? So right now you're in a consolidation season. Is there a hobby you're cutting? Is there something that you're pulling out going, yeah, I've been meaning to get rid of this, but I guess I got to chuck it.
So I'm an evaluator. So I use my spreadsheet to, on a regular basis, it puts some metrics down if something is being, is fulfilling. So for instance, like golf was a big thing. My brother used to come into town. We'd go golfing. I was terrible at it, but it was something that I got to spend time with my brother.
Right.
My brother stopped coming to town like that, and so I stopped golfing. So had there been still a value, the real value, then I would have continued doing it. So that's one of those things where as soon as it gets diminishing returns, where I'm putting more effort than I'm receiving in it, that's when it has a chance to get cut. Or I can decide to breathe value into it and keep it alive too.
Sure. Yeah, I had some friends, and I've had some friends over the year that, whatever hobby they were going to do, they were adding value to that hobby. And if they were going to snowboard, they had all the best snowboard equipment. If they were going to golf, they were going out, they were going to spend a couple of grand on golf clubs, all new clothes, the whole nine. They were going to look the part. They might've been terrible, but they were going to look the part. And there's something to be said for that. If for me, I enjoy, if I break 100 when I play golf, that's a good day. I enjoy hobbies and now the whole thing, breaking 100 is a good day. The first time I ever played golf, I did a double par. I thought that was pretty good.
Never heard that word before.
It was rough. It means it took me twice as many shots to do the whole course as you were supposed to.
I think they kick you off the course. I think over a certain deal, they kick you off.
Yeah, it was like $10. It was a real cheapo course or whatever. But I played the whole day, and for one shot, the 17th hole, I won't forget this. I sliced my drive almost, 50 yards to the right over by the pond. And there were these two trees, big, like 40-foot evergreen trees. My ball is sitting right there, and the green is on the other side. And I'm like, at this point, my score is like 170. I'm like, I might as well just take a shot. And I don't know what club I grabbed, but I stepped up, and it was maybe 150 yards, might have been a 7-iron or something like that. And I just stepped up, and I was like, I got nothing to lose at this point. And I clobbered the shot, and it perfectly went right. The two peaks went right between, landed like 3 feet from the cup. And I was like, oh, I have to come back and play golf. It totally suckered me in. It's the one shot that I could tell my friends about. Right. I was like, oh, and the next time I played there, I was like, guys, it was right here.
Yep.
And you want to reenact that shot. And the next time you're whacking it in the tree or putting it in the pond or whatever. But that one shot pulled me in. And, but realistically, you can choose to, hey, this is going to be fun. I used it, especially early on in ministry, to connect with a lot of people, especially some of the business people in church that liked to golf. It was a great way for me to go out and get to spend 4 hours with somebody. And really, so it didn't matter if I was terrible. It did a little bit. If I was slowing us down, that was not a good thing. So I wanted to be good enough not to slow us down, but I wasn't there to have a handicap.
Let me share this with you, because it's not related, but sort of is a little relevant. So yesterday I was sitting down with a guy, and we were kind of marking out traits, things that are natural traits, characteristics of your personality, kind of get to know who you are. And he said, here's this deck of 100 cards, and each one had some kind of word on it. And they were all very good words, right? Passion and love and all that kind of stuff. He says, I want you to get down to 5 cards. And there's like 100 of them. Eliminate. And as you're going through this, you're like, yeah, I'm that. And yeah, I'm that. And yeah, I'm that. So the first time around, I took like maybe half the deck, and I was like, there's no way I can eliminate any more. Right. And then, so I did it a second time, and I eliminated more of those cards. And I was like, the first time I wasn't able to, but then the second time there was a standard that like notched up where I was going to, able to kill them off. And I got down to 10 cards, and I kept shuffling through them, and I kept doing shuffling. He was like, here, let me do this for you. So he put 2-1 against one another. He goes, if you were put in a position where to choose one of these, which would it be? And I said, well, that one, of course. And he was like, move this down. And all he did was he put the top 5 of those 10. And somehow he tricked my brain into prioritizing things that I didn't think had even a priority by using that spreadsheet method of, let's just say I only had 10 minutes, or there's a fire in my house and I can only grab 5 things. What would they be?
Yeah, right.
And that's the kind of like operational procedure that you do before there's a fire, of course.
Yeah. Well, and they say that that's how you build you don't know what your priorities are until one thing comes into conflict with another.
Yep, exactly.
And then you find out real quick what's important to you. And so most people are like, oh, my family's important to me. And then all of a sudden they have a crisis at work, and it's like, well, I guess they weren't that important because I didn't have to be home for dinner tonight.
Right.
Or whatever, fill in the blank. And it's always interesting to me when you're in that consolidation phase and you're looking at things, you find out very quickly, like, oh, well, this is a priority to me, like my kids or whatever. Like, I haven't been spending the time there. You know, I'm getting ready to go on this trip to Israel. So my wife was like, we need to have a date and we need to take the kids out. And I'm like, yes, we do. And, you know, we're discussing, there's, you know, a couple of events and stuff happening. And I had a preach Sunday and she's like, I'd really like you to be here. And I was like, yes, I feel the tug of my responsibility and yes, I need to be
at odds with what right. you're saying.
And so
right
then
now.
What's the priority? What's important to you? And so when you start to consolidate, that's the beautiful thing. You know, we started spring cleaning a bit and we did that right before we moved a couple of years ago. When we bought our house and you find out real quick, like, well, I want to keep this. Well, why do I want to keep it? Well, if you can keep this or this. And I find that when I'm given options like that, I'll make a choice.
For sure.
Where if it's just like, keep this or keep this, well, I'm going to keep it.
Yeah.
But if I'm like, well, you can keep this or this, well, I like that better. All right. Well, then that's got to go. And it actually makes it easier to make decisions like that, which I find kind of fascinating. I was watching a TikTok video, and we know everything on the internet is true.
Absolutely.
And they were talking about accessing your prefrontal cortex, where it makes your logical decisions. Yes. And that a lot of times, whether it's a kid throwing a temper tantrum, that was the illustration that was used, that when your kid throws a temper tantrum, they're not using their prefrontal cortex. They're using the emotional side of the brain. They mentioned the technical term and it's slipping away from me, but they're in that space. And in order to snap them out of it, you need to give them simple, logical commands, like what color is the wall over there or touch your nose or, and they showed a couple illustrations with that. And I'm like, wow, that's fascinating because you're literally moving the brain from where it's working. You don't care what color the wall is. They might get it wrong, but you're asking them to make a logical and factual assessment. And so by doing that, you're pulling them out of the emotional space of the brain to the logical space. Now, the reason I say that is in a consolidation phase, there are times where you want to make an emotional decision mm-hmm. because you're feeling sad or something's been taken from you or you feel like you have to release something. How do you switch your brain to the logical space? You mentioned spreadsheets. Okay. And I know that's Joe's yes. kind of space. But do you have an exercise that you do for yourself that you're like, all right, yeah, I'm feeling sad. Yes, stuff's been taken. Yes, I've released stuff. But I need to go to this logical space.
My wife is my counterbalance to that. So I know I'm developed completely in the logical side and mm-hmm. she's completely developed in the emotional side.
Sure.
So when I get the ones that I'm certain are supposed to be in the logical deal, it's all me. If I know there's a couple of them that I'm not the proper person to make that decision, I punt. Right. And then she helps me decide on the other side. Now, if I'm forced into it where she can't be part of the deciding, I at least have to frame it as if I'm a third party that's standing over there, like Bill over there. And I have to say, like, if my fiercest critic were looking at this, he's using an emotional sense. Mm. And what's he going to say about that? He removes logic and excuses and reasons, and he's looking at it from the emotional appeal. And I can use my critic as a person who gives me enough information to decide.
Yeah, it's important because you have to have both, I think, in a consolidation. Like sometimes you have to have a funeral and you got to say goodbye. And sometimes, you know, you got to be logical and willing to, you know what? Yeah, I really want that to stay around. But realistically, you know, I just consolidated a bunch of my clothes. They're clothes that I have been holding since like 2004 and 2005. And some of them are meaningful. Like, you know, one of them was one of the first things. It's a polo that Sam bought me when she came back from Disney in 2005, and it's been hanging in my closet. I don't think I've ever worn it. I think it still has the tag on it, and not for nothing, but it's sentimental. And so, you know, do I want to keep that? Do I need to put it in a tote? And so I went through, and then some of it's just like, oh yeah, I wore that. I remember when I used to wear that. And I'm like, you know, at some point I'll wear that again, or, you know, I'll bring that back out with my summer clothes. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, those little elves got into my closet and made the stitches smaller. And so, you know, I went through and I said to Sam, I said, I'm just going to consolidate. But, you know, some of that, like a sentimental shirt like that, you might have to have a little funeral for him, be like, all right, it was great. Sayonara. And you have to have your moment. But then the logical side of you has to be able to navigate and make the decision. So it's almost hand in hand. Sam wouldn't have cared, but it could be calloused of me just to be like, yeah, whatever. I haven't worn this shirt and throw it out. You know, I need to, all right, I pay it its respects and then I move on. Now that may seem silly, it's clothes, but when you start getting into consolidating relationships and people and, you know, decisions like that, well, then you got to take into account, yeah, there are some logical things here. There are some things that are going to happen whether we like it or not, but then, you know, emotional, like you got to give them some space. And we're talking about, you know, two people have to figure out where does the relationship sit after this hobby's gone or after those things, and figure that out. And the tenderness of that is always interesting because some people are fight people in that moment. Some people are flight people. Some people are like, all right, fine. You don't do that. Have a good life. Deuces, you know, whatever. And then other people are like, well, maybe we can play tennis, you know, you know what I mean? In that space. And there's nothing wrong with that, but navigating people in this requires, I think, both logic and emotion, where I think deciding which clothes, I mean, realistically just needed logic to say, I haven't worn any of this in the last 15 years. Time for it to go into a bag and go to somebody else.
All right. So here, let me give you some logic math, some emotional, psychological, logical math. And so let's just say, I'm going to give you two examples. One you're going to agree with, and one's going to feel a little slimy. So let's just say I have a drawer that holds 40 t-shirts, mm-hmm. right? My capacity of the drawer equals 40 t-shirts. So once I come to capacity, then all I have to do is, if I want a new t-shirt, I just have to pick one out of there that I can get rid of. And so I want the one. So it's leverage against the one has to pay the sacrifice for being, you know, counted out of there. So that's the goal. One is to know what the capacity is, bring it to capacity.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's just swapping out. Now, here's another one. Let's just say staffing. All right. Mm-hmm. Every 6 months, I want to hire somebody. I'm at full capacity. So the staffing thing is, I want to bring in someone new and I want to get rid of my worst person. I want to let everybody know that somebody's getting fired every 6 months.
And it's somebody's getting voted off this island every in six months.
And it's the lowest one in the rung. So don't be him. Right. And that one feels a little slimy, but it's the same math. And then everybody kind of knows the math. And if you're, you know, it
the lets tribe is spoken.
Right. Yes. Yes. I'm sorry. The math did this, not me.
So it realistically, obviously, yeah, you can have systems set in place like that, you know, but it's much easier to toss an old t-shirt than it is somebody who you've been working with for 6 months, especially, you know, and I know the cultures at every company is different. But, you know, culture in some places, you know, feels like family, like you hang out together and you know each other's kids. It's a different dynamic than just, all right, the tribe's spoken, 6 months, you're out. You know, that can feel calloused for a lot of people.
And that's why I felt it said it would feel, I mean, from a, you know, math standpoint, it's really good math for the, you know, production of a company.
Sure.
But I guess just like my truck, if you're supposed to stay, then something will get in the way of my fist, you know?
All right. Everybody extend your hands. We're praying for everybody at Youngstown Studio, Youngstown Computer. Joe's firing people left and right.
Oh, so good.
That's funny. So let's talk about post consolidation. Yeah. So the consolidation, obviously there's pain, there's loss. There's sometimes grief, and it can be tricky when it comes to people. You mentioned that you've never had a season where you haven't, after a consolidation season, had a huge net gain.
Yes, because this is my favorite part.
Okay.
I put most of my energy into this next part.
So let's jump into, all right, let's switch gears. We've consolidated for the first 26 minutes of the podcast. Let's move into the net gain. Let's move into the harvest season. Let's move into the rosebuds that are popping up because you pruned off the dead stuff.
So when you remove something, you have a vacancy. If you are intentional about it, you will fill the vacancy with something that had more value than the previous thing that occupied it. If you do nothing, it will just sink into whatever and you'll get no gain out of it. So let's just say I was doing something before and I was spending an hour doing X. Like I was on the computer and I timed me out. I was doing 2 hours on the computer doing Facebook, right? And I was like, I don't like that. I'm going to kill you, Facebook. Now I have 2 hours. What am I going to do with the 2 hours? Now, when I move it over to something, like I'm going to get a net gain, right? Because the thing I killed.
Candy Crush.
Anything's better than
solitaire,
Facebook, right? I'm doing Farmville and I'm still getting a better value out of thinking Facebook. But you know, and it's not too hard, but if you allow it to be kind of obscure and you can't see what you're doing, right, then you're always going to get a net loss because it's just going to be worse than you were before.
Sure. No, that totally makes sense. And you know, when you create space, leadership abhors a vacuum. And so for me, I find that when I create space, when I say no to something, like there's always that hole. And my knee jerk is like, all right, well, I now have this 2 hours. I don't want to waste it. I was wasting it with the other thing, or the other thing was good for a season and it died. What do I fill it with? So how do you engage with what's worth filling? What's worth putting in its place? How do you do that?
Well, most people don't get to that spot because they've not taken an inventory of what they're doing. You say, how much time did you spend on Netflix? I don't know. How much time did you do this? They just don't know.
Yeah.
But once you start calculating, knowing the hours that you're spending in there, you can almost place it. Like if I, let's just say it's at the beginning, it's 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
There are certain things that are gonna make total sense that are better at the very beginning of the day because sure. it's going to give me an output. But think about it this way. If you have a queue of wish I had or wish I was doing, if you kind of thought through those things, it would sort of like give you the motivation to clear out those consolidations because you have stuff waiting for your attention and it's begging you to free something up so you could pay attention to it.
So in this consolidation period, what are the things that you're waiting for on the other side that you know that, hey, once this consolidation is done, I'm going to have the time to do this, this, and this?
Say that again. So
right now you're in a consolidation period. There's things that are going, some things by choice, some things by circumstance. And at the end of this, what's Joe going to implement? What are the holes going to be filled with this time?
Okay.
For you?
So we have a project with the city of Struthers where they're getting a building, right?
Okay.
Opening a coffee shop, doing an event, doing a venue, doing some kind of breakfast thing and some other stuff. Right.
Beautiful.
And I guess I got to clear some space and have some time. So when that happens, I'm ready to pummel it. So I'm getting set up in May, June for August, September. So it's going to take some time, to clear that out.
That's cool. And I saw you're doing movie nights again with them of that. Yeah.
Nice. People often ask me like, where do I get this surplus of time? Like where does it happen? The time compression or time travel? And it's 100% intentional. Like 100% of it is on purpose.
Yeah. It's either by design or by default. It'll happen one of two ways.
Yep.
I like my wife right now, she's training for a 5K. She has been probably since January or maybe a little before that, a little after that. And her 5K is coming up next Saturday, the 21st. She's super pumped. And you know, I'm excited. I'm going to be on FaceTime because I won't be here. I'll be in Israel. She's not happy about that. I love you, babe. I'm sorry. but realistically, she's had to carve out time for her. So she had to consolidate some stuff. So what she chose to do is, honestly, we've cut back our Netflix time at night so we can go to bed a little earlier so that she can wake up a little earlier so that she can train for the 5K. Mm-hmm. And it's been interesting because where before the kids would go to sleep and we would go, all right, we have a little bit of time. We'd straighten the house up, whatever. And then it was like, oh, you want to watch a show, you know, whatever. And then next thing you know, you're 2 hours, 3 hours, and it's 11:30. Then you're like, all right, let's go to bed. And then you're groggy at 6:30, 7 o'clock when you got to get up to get the kids out of bed so they can get on the bus. And she wanted to get up and start running at 5 or 5:30. And she's like, if we're going to do this, like we have to be in bed by, I think it was 10 o'clock. And I was like, all right, well then, you know, do you want to skip out on watching a show or whatever? We might watch a show twice a week now, maybe. But it's becoming more and more rare. And I find that I'm like, at first I was kind of like, we didn't finish that show. Like, I need to know what's going to happen to the main character, Sam. Like, you can't just cut me off for my supply. Okay. And so there's one or two shows that I was like, listen, you can go to bed. You're getting up and running. I'm finishing whatever show I'm watching. And, and again, there's nothing wrong with Netflix, nothing wrong with Facebook, nothing wrong with watching those things. But when you're evaluating certain things and you're saying, hey, I need to consolidate some things in my life so that I have space for this, now she ran a 5K outside the other day, I think in 38 minutes or something like that. I think she's going to get close to that 30 minute mark when she runs next week. But all of that's because she consolidated this and I followed along. And honestly, it's made me more productive. I've been working during that time where she'll go to sleep. And I'm like, you know what? I can stay up for an hour and I'll send a couple of emails. I'll do some of that stuff because everybody's asleep. Or I'll read or I'll get some early sleep and I'll be up early and puts me in a different headspace. So, but that's a very practical example of what you're talking about there.
Yeah. And it's really important that the people around you are supportive of those consolidations because we have a habit of making our consolidation somebody else's penalty. And they
That is so true. I should be able to watch Netflix. Thanks, Joe.
And let me, again, this is not directly related, but it's a cool analogy. When we go on our cruises, like twice a year, I could pretty much count on that I was going to do a massage. Like I loved the massage. Nice. It was my favorite
hot rock
thing. Yes. Mm. But they would spend tons of time getting my back back in order because I'm pretty strenuous. I hurt it with my running quite a bit. So it was great for me. Since I haven't been going on cruises, it's been like 2 years since I got one. So I said, I got to find someone local that I can get back in that habit again. So the first time I went to this massage therapist, they did the same thing. It was nice and enjoyable. I'm like, yes, right? The second time I went back, they said, here's what, we're not going to do a massage this time. We're going to start to correct the errors. I'm like, oh, correct the errors. This sounds good. I'm fixing some problems. It was not at all enjoyable. It was the most excruciating thing. She's like, I'm going to stretch all of your muscles. And that meant put this big metal thing in and like really tear my muscles apart, gave me bruises all over the place. I'm like, wait a minute.
It's a medieval torture contraption.
I feel great, but damn, that was awful. And then I was like, I'm going back next time. Should I say, can I get the enjoyable massage this next time? Or should we continue the
progress? Where's the oil and the hot rocks? Okay. Yeah, no, totally. That totally makes sense. And it's true, because a lot of times the enjoyable stuff's great, but it doesn't always get you the results that you want. I mean, that's true across the board, whether we're talking health, whether you're talking spirituality, whether you're talking reading a book is not always fun, but the people who read one book a month over a 10-year period will be in the top 1% of their field. That's a stat you can almost take to the bank, because people mostly don't read books after they leave college. And there's access to power and information. You know, there's certain things like that, hey, if you set aside the time, no, it may not be enjoyable. You may not be much of a reader, but you know, there's audiobooks, there's other stuff out there. Or, you know, you may not be much of a runner. Well, that's fine. Maybe you got to be a biker, you got to walk, but doing something for your health is worth doing. And, you know, I think about that even with my kids. I heard this stat. This is going to blow your hair back, Joe. I know you don't have any, but this is going to blow your hair back. Anyhow, by the time your kid turns 12 years old, they have spent 75% of all the time you will ever spend with them with you.
Oh, shit. I hate that stat.
Dude, that stat stung. I read that stat. My mouth fell open and I was like, I have to be more intentional. Charlotte's 10. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, what in the world? And then, you know, by the time they hit 18, it's like 90%.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
I like my kid. I like being around him.
But you think about that, and I get it. You know, they're going to go off and they're going to get married. And I think about now, like, you know, if I see my mom once or twice a year, like I talk to her on the phone and stuff, but we live in different states. Like, you start thinking in those terms and it's like, wow. Like, for my kids, I'm like, how do I invest more time with my kids? Like, how do I bring them along with stuff
that's a consolidation too. When that happens, it's inevitable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so like
people hate it when kids go off to college, but yeah, think about
the people who come to you feeling their purpose is left the door of the building.
How many divorces happen because they fell in love with their kids and not with their spouse?
Ah, man, that's hard.
Mm-hmm. And then they are looking at somebody who they've, you know, co-parented with and been roommates with for 20 years. And they're like, I don't even like you. And now I got to live retirement with you and the rest, you know, and some people manage to fix it at that point. But if you don't date through, you know, and continue to love your spouse through that stuff, it's very difficult when they leave, because everything's around like getting Johnny to soccer and getting him here. And we got to get him to National Honor Society, you know, and you're helping with homework and you're helping with friends and you're a chauffeur for this. And then you arrive at the spot and then, yeah, life consolidates real quick and you find out, well, we didn't steward our relationship through this whole thing. So now you're at a huge deficit. You've lost a child in the sense that the child's moved on. They're becoming an adult. And so there's a loss there. And then you're looking at your spouse going, well, we didn't do anything to cultivate this relationship. So there's now a loss there. And do I want to take the time to make up for 20 years? And that's a tough one. And I do, I see that a lot with people.
Yeah. We say intentional a lot. We say that, and it's gotten kind of buzzy. So that it loses its meaning. Intentional, when we're talking about it, is basically the natural tendency versus what you decide you're going to break away from that natural tendency, because your relationship will wither by default unless you decide that you don't want that to happen. You will stray, you will make bad decisions, you will, you know, have different distractions that you'll fall in love with more than those people. And that's not just from your wife or your spouse. It's also your job. I mean,
anywhere.
Think about the honeymoon phase. You loved your job on the first 30 days. And right now, go complain about it every stinking day of your life. You know,
that's true. It's true.
But there are people that do love their job after 5 years because they're intentional about it.
Exactly. Intentionality is the way through a consolidation period or a harvest period. It doesn't matter whether you're consolidating your stuff in your life. You're going to have to get out your spreadsheets and consolidate and make some logical decisions, but understand there's emotion attached to it and there's people attached to those decisions. And then as you're stepping into harvest and you're going to have this great new season where you get to put new seed in the ground and eat new fruit. That's awesome. But make sure you're intentional about it or it will gobble up time. So intentionality is the answer to both things.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.